Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of At Odds with Wrestling. Joe and Adam here. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. I'm getting ready. Looking forward to things going back to normal so we're not in these troubling times anymore.
Oh, if only we had a character that was like kind of like the Sandman at the Apollo, kind of, or like a Pit Pat from Globochem that was like the mascot for these troubling times. If only there was a podcast that talked about such a thing.
Yes, and hopefully their name would be like have alliteration and also start with a T, because I like the things to rhyme like that.
I was going to make a joke and say that the mascot for the troubling times in the world of professional wrestling are all the fans dressed as chairs at all these events. But fans aren't allowed there even to go there dressed up as chairs. Have you ever heard that joke? That's one of my favorite wrestling jokes.
Mm-hmm.
The first person I ever heard say it was New Jack in a shoot interview or something. He said if there were any fans there, they must have been dressed as chairs, because that's all I saw when I looked out at the crowd.
Yeah, either that or they went to an AEW taping where apparently you can just go to them now, but that's a different story.
I guess. I always learned from my days, and obviously things are different because most of the companies do like standing room only for the most part. But mm-hmm. I always say that it's easier to take chairs away that no one's sitting in than to go find chairs for more people to sit in.
Yeah.
We put out like three rows of chairs, and sometimes like that last row wouldn't get filled. So we just like slowly start taking that away in the hopes that everyone would get the message and move forward.
That reminds me of the first Chikara show I went to, which was King of Trios. And yeah. I showed up late and all the seats were taken, and a bunch of the young boys had to bring out chairs for me and Todd. And we felt special. It was like VIP treatment. It was like that scene in Goodfellas.
Well, it was more than likely one of those things where they put out like six rows on each side, and then or seven rows or whatever X rows it is, for however many chairs it is. And then once the show started and like we see people like the doors slow down, like not tons and tons of people coming in, they start pulling chairs away. And then if people show up, it's easier to go, okay, let me go get you two chairs or three chairs, than it is just like, I don't know, go sit in the middle of this big empty row or these big empty rows.
Why do you have to take this away from me? It was much better in my head, and now you have to go and instill reality into it.
That's true. Yeah. That's what I'm here for. And hey, I'll just throw this out here at the beginning of the show. And we have a bunch of stuff to talk about, of course. And we did get a lot of positive feedback for our discussion about that old Chikara show.
Yeah.
And more than likely when my turn comes up in the barrel again, I do have a couple Chikara shows in mind off independentwrestling.tv to rewatch and kind of stir up some old nostalgic memories. Okay. And I do appreciate everyone saying so. I'm not going to do a Conrad-verse-esque thing of expose of like history of Chikara thing. I barely have enough time for the podcast that I currently do, let alone like adding technically a fourth podcast on top of things.
Well, I got a solution for that, Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm willing to, you know, put At Odds on hiatus, you know, if you want to free yourself up for other projects.
So that's the thing. I don't want to free myself up for other projects. See, if you say I'm stepping away from At Odds, then At Odds is done.
Oh, really?
It's not like I'm going to like, well, I need something to fill that void. No, if this podcast goes away, it's replaced by sleep.
All right. Fair enough. It was an idea. I thought I would get my out there. I try convincing Todd to take my place all the time, and he won't do it either. So we'll keep working at it. I'll figure something out.
And I'll throw this out here as well. It did not make my dislikes this week, but it was close. This was supposed to be the week, if the world did not collapse, that you were supposed to be on your vacation. Mm-hmm. That this week's episode of the show was supposed to be Todd and Michelle. Michelle, the spouse of DJ from Wednesday Night Wars.
This week
was supposed to be their episode. They would have had to have watched wrestling and do the build up for the pay-per-view this weekend.
I would have been in San Diego working on my tan, but instead sitting here talking to you.
I think you're better off.
I guess. All right, Joe. Did anything happen on this day in wrestling history?
Did it?
And now, At Odds with Wrestling presents This Day in Wrestling History.
So, a couple things. Kind of sort of piggybacking on top of each other. We'll start with the newest to the oldest.
Okay.
On this day, in 2011, Sinclair Broadcasting purchased Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor had been previously on HDNet for a while. Allegedly, they were losing money. If you listen to Kerry Silkin's great podcast when it comes back, or the archives, Last Stop Penn Station, he talks about how, you know, Ring of Honor really never made money. He invested a lot of money into Ring of Honor as early back as, like, 2003 to buy them, like, lighting rigs and all sorts of things, and end up buying the company for reasons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sold it to Sinclair Broadcasting, and Sinclair just kind of used it to fill time slots on a bunch of the stations that they owned. And a certain Candy Dots, Jim Cornette, will tell you that if it wasn't for him in Ring of Honor and booking things and changing it more to a TV product, then Sinclair would have never bought it, and Ring of Honor went away. So if you have not liked Ring of Honor for the last 9 years, it's Jim Cornette's fault.
I like it.
The main thing that I blame Jim Cornette for from his run in Ring of Honor is that to this day I call QT Marshall QT Marshall, because that was his name when he was on Ring of Honor TV.
Mm. Did he have hair back then either?
Barely.
All right.
The people that Jim Cornette saw the most money in during his stint in Ring of Honor were QT Marshall, Mike Bennett, specifically as like a guy who had like a Rocky-esque, like a Mickey from Rocky-esque trainer who taught Mike Bennett like these shoot holds that they don't do anymore. And who was the other one that he saw big things in? Oh, like Mikey Mondo, formerly of the Spirit Squad in OVW. People Jim Cornette did not see money in from Ring of Honor. Kevin Steen, El Generico, Steve Corino, Colt Cabana. The current members of the Dark Order, Orange Cassidy. The list goes on and on of the people that Jim Cornette did not see money in. And time will tell. You know, QT Marshall, you know, he's still got a lot of bumps left in his bump card.
Yeah. Well, Candy Dots seems like he's got his finger on the pulse of what American wrestling fans want in 2020. So, we have faith in him.
I want him to stop talking about wrestling that happened after 2005. That's what I want him to do. But that ship has sailed. Also, yeah. Adam, on this day in 2001 was arguably one of the best matches ever on Monday Night Raw, as Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho took on the two-man power trip of Cold Stone Steve Austin and Triple H. Also infamously, this is the match where Triple H's quad tore off the bone from stomping when doing a punch, which, you know, happens to normal people not full of steroids.
The meat's tender, tears right off the bone.
Oh my goodness. I remember where I was, too. I was actually in Alabama, of all places, on vacation with my wife, because she has family down there. And, like, they're all, like, Jesus-y and Christian-y. And they went to bed, like, super early. And I'm like, I'm staying up and watching Monday Night Raw. And I stayed up and I watched Monday Night Raw. And then I go to bed, and my wife's like, how was Monday Night Raw? And I'm like, yeah, I think I saw Triple H's leg explode. So it was real weird. I'm not really sure what happened. But kudos to Triple H continuing the match, taking the walls of Jericho on top of the table with his quad ripped off his bone. And also kudos to Dr. Andrews for pumping Triple H so full of steroids that when he made his return at the Royal Rumble the following January, he had extra muscles coming out of his back and was so gassed up and immobile for 3 months. He only wrestled Kurt Angle and Booker T on TV because those are the only two people they trusted to carry his bloated ass through matches.
I missed the Beautiful Day U2 vignettes for his return.
So all those Beautiful Day ones, there's a great one with... Christian was another one that they let have matches with Triple H because, like, that's who they trusted, like, not to hurt bloated Triple H. And Christian is like, oh, all these videos for Triple H come back. Oh, it's a beautiful day. And he goes, who'd he ever beat? And that's like one of my favorite lines of Christian saying about Triple H in 2001. Who'd he ever beat? Mm-hmm. And also, on this day in 2000, was the World Wrestling Entertainment Judgment Day pay-per-view. You know, your standard run-of-the-mill pay-per-view, but most importantly, this was the official debut
of Biker Taker. Oh. Uncle Taker.
Uncle Biker Taker.
I just watched that video on you or on Twitter or whatever earlier, and it's just him like dusting fools in his long leather jacket.
Oh, dude, it was so awesome. It was like one of the coolest moments, like when it happened, like all those videos, like we all knew Undertaker was coming back, but I don't think anyone knew he was going to be Uncle Taker, Biker Taker.
I think that that needs to be, like, I know that right now what little Undertaker we get kind of floats the line between the two. He needs to go full all-out Uncle Taker, Biker Taker now, because, like, let that be his last gimmick.
I don't know. He practically, I don't know. Anyway.
You just want to see him shoot lightning out of his fingers.
Well. Hey, let's get into what we liked and didn't like from this past week of professional wrestling. Adam, you go first.
All right, I'm going to go with a like first, and I'm going to do this because I fear that there's a chance that it might be in your like, so I want to go first on this one.
All right.
And that is from SmackDown this week, Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak.
No, you know what? Not on my list, but go ahead.
Oh, we'll see. You surprise me all the time. All right, now, obviously, we've talked before about not being a fan of matches that are just all grappling.
Yeah,
but what this match was, for those that didn't see it, is basically they did the entire match where neither one of them threw a punch or a kick the entire match. It was all about like holds, and there's suplexes in there and counters and just a lot of great ring psychology. And I think this is a great example of how you can do that style of a match, but it never at any point seemed boring. A lot of the shoot style wrestling that we see ends up being people trying to emulate MMA matches, which doesn't work for the majority of people. But these two guys managed to just do a match full of holds and hold reversals that was still as compelling as a match filled with like high spots and dives and everything. And obviously Daniel Bryan finished it off with a heel hook on Drew Gulak in what turned out to be Gulak's last match currently with the WWE, because I guess his contract ended. But I was really impressed with the match. I usually don't like that style of match, but they did it so expertly that it's hard not to watch it and have appreciated it.
I liked it. It probably would have been like my third like, I guess. Other more recent stuff I think popped up. I love that style of match when done well. And, you know, we had a similar match on NXT last week between Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher, which was more or less the same thing, but more the UFC influence, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. This was more of the wrestling grapple sort of thing. And when you have a master like Daniel Bryan in there doing it, it's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that this is a great template that people can use down the road when you have those matches where like friends are pitted against each other against their will, you know, which is a cliche storyline we see in wrestling a lot, where it's like, oh, these tag team partners are forced to wrestle each other in this tournament or at the behest of like the evil authority figure. This is a great way to have a match where you're not trying to necessarily hurt your opponent, but you're just trying to get the win.
Correct. You know?
And this would be a great example that people can study, I think.
And this is, you know, more or less what wrestling was for the most part, for a better part of like the 60s and 70s. Like, you would have one character who was a very stereotypical over-the-top heel type character. But for the most part, you would have two guys, one, you know, maybe a little bit more baby-face than the other. And then they would have their match, and you would have maybe one get the better of the other this way, the other get the better of another that way. And then you would see one of the guys maybe take a shortcut, maybe not break immediately on five, or maybe not let the guy out of the ropes, or whatever it is. not like anything overtly heel. You don't want to turn anyone heel out of something like this. But you want to see like the one guy, maybe the less experienced guy, just, you know, maybe get frustrated. And then you have to have it be at the end of the match, whether, you know, the person who was doing the little bit dirtier tactics wins by doing something clean, or the guy who didn't do the dirtier tactic wins, and then they both shake hands at the end.
Yeah.
You know, one of the triedest and true stories to tell with a professional wrestling match that literally no one does anymore.
Yeah. And that's why it stood out so much. You know, it's old school in a sports entertainment era.
Yes.
All right.
So let's go with one of my likes from this past week. And even though the match was short, I like those vests that Ever-Rise wore out to the ring. They look really cool. They look like a couple of bad boys. Everybody making that joke.
Yes, explain that to me, because I'm out of the loop.
So, for a time, they initially were 2.0, Shane Matthews and Jagged. Then they were 3.0, Shane Matthews and Jagged. And for a little while, they would do a gimmick where it's essentially those two guys, but they were the bad boys, Chad and Brad Bad. And again, this is before any of your talking shop type people or so forth would do, you know, your Chad Bads and Brad Bads or whatever the hell they do, you know, over on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would just wear, like, jean, like, they would dress like bikers, and they would just do, like, Road Warrior moves, and that was it. In the Canadian promotions they did it in, maybe they did it a little bit more spicy with a little bit more colorful language that you may not be able to get away with at the time, and especially not now. And then they ended up doing it at Chikara, where obviously they weren't like wearing masks or anything, but when they would don the denim and the bandanas, that stupid director of fun, Leonard Chikarison, couldn't tell them from 3.0, who were not able to contend for titles or some such bullshit like that. And the gimmick ended up getting blown off, but it's like a sentimental favorite to see Shane Matthews and Jagged knee Matt Martell and Chase Parker now? Okay. Ever-Rise doing getting the nod from the social media people as the bad boys. But they had new gear and they had funky vests. Everybody in wrestling should have a jacket or a vest when you come out for your entrance presentation, you know, especially yeah. if you have a really good physique, you wear that jacket out and everyone's like, oh, look at that big dude. And then you pop the jacket off and you get like a second pop for the nice physique.
Yeah. And I agree. And every tag team needs to be wearing some type of matching gear. That should be a requirement.
Correct.
Yes. The only time you're not allowed to wear matching gear is if you're reluctant partners thrown together.
So I'm okay with the reluctant partners that get thrown together not having matching gear, but then eventually, the longer they're together, they start to gradually get more matching gear.
Kind of like the bar, like Sheamus and Cesaro originally were the reluctant partners, and then they were wearing kilts and coats.
Right.
All right. But yeah, good for Ever-Rise. This is their second big spot on WWE television, I believe. As they were on Raw a couple weeks back.
That's correct.
All right, so hopefully more of them to come. All right, am I up?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and do another like, just so I can get my positivity out of the way. And that is from NXT this week. The Cruiserweight title finals, Kushida versus Drake Maverick. I really enjoyed this match, number one, because I enjoy both of these performers. I've obviously been a Kushida mark for a while. The Drake Maverick stuff, you know, say what you want about WWE capitalizing on a shitty situation that they created, but it is making Drake Maverick into like a sympathetic babyface. But I really enjoyed the match because of how the entire time Kushida really was just hammering down on Drake's arm and basically Drake's emotion and screaming about, you know, don't stop the match the entire time. And the arm bar was countered at the last, Kushida's arm bar was countered where Drake got the pin, setting up like a triple threat to get into the finals next week between Kushida, Maverick, and Jake Atlas. So I thought it was a great match, great story, a lot of good psychology. And Drake Maverick, if he stays in WWE, great. I hope they use him well. If he ends up leaving after this tournament, you know, when the wrestling gets uncanceled, I hope to see him flourish elsewhere.
I'm with you in regards to the build of the match and everything else, but imagine how awesome this would have been if there were fans there.
Oh, I mean, everything we talk about is probably more awesome with fans there, with the exception of, like, your occasional promo here or there, but, yeah, I mean, we can't it is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
As long as they don't let Otis cash in the Money in the Bank, I think everything is going to be in front of an empty crowd for a little bit.
Yeah, that's a bummer. So, hey, I'll get my last leg out of the way as well, so we can get to some hot burials and so forth. I really liked, from NXT this past week, the Shotzi Blackheart video package, because it reminded me of the debuts of your favorite World Wrestling Entertainment characters from the late 80s and early 90s, where she's crushing cars in a tank that's very obviously hers and doesn't have the branded website where they rented it for the day all over it.
And like, her name that she wrote on the tank in chalk.
And then as she's, like, crushing cars with it, she's like, "Yeah, that's you, Chelsea Green!" With some real cheesy, over-the-top dialogue. I like the sound of her voice in a goofy way, because she sounds silly. She sounds like a little kid. And as a 42-year-old man, pretty much everyone in wrestling is a little kid. But I think, like, obviously you can't, you know, change time and everything else like that. But I think if they did, like, these vignettes to build up her debut, it would have been, like, so much cooler. But the fact that they're devoting TV time to her, you know, renting tanks to film videos of her crushing cars, and it was just, like, a fun, goofy thing, and it's one of the things that I love about wrestling of my youth, and it just brings back those sort of memories when I see something like that. So I thought it was a lot of fun, and I wish more people got stuff like that, you know, whether it be early in their careers or before they debut.
You know what? If we were still doing three likes and three dislikes, this would have been in my dislikes.
Oh, come on now.
Now, I will say that you have sold me on it based on the nostalgia angle.
Yeah.
But when I was watching it, like, if you were playing cliche bingo, you would have, like, you would have won four times, because there was so many, like, one-liners in there that you would have heard. In my mind, I'm like, oh, this is every cliche in the book. But now that you mention it, it's everything you would have heard watching, like, Superstars on a Saturday morning. And now it all makes sense. But yeah, I mean, now I see your take on it. And if you're going to treat it as a parody of 80s wrestling, then
I see it as a loving homage.
Yeah, like a throwback.
Yeah.
Then I guess I would have learned to appreciate it more. But in like a snapshot in 2020, it kind of felt weird. But I've come around. You've talked me into it. So luckily we don't have three likes and three dislikes.
The great convincer. Go ahead.
Yes. All right. I'm going to do my first dislike this week.
Yep.
And that is AEW. Now, this was just, I want to preface this by saying this is my way to shoehorn a like into the dislike file. But that is, I'm going to say AEW, nobody catching dives. Now, both Rey Fénix and Orange Cassidy took spectacular dives to the outside. Rey Fénix came up a little short. Orange Cassidy went a little long and hit his legs on the guide rail. But with that being said, obviously that match was awesome. Orange Cassidy looked phenomenal. Not doing much of the slow style. I don't think there was any of the lethargic kicks or punches in the match. It was just all high octane offense. So again, officially it's in my dislikes because nobody in AEW wants to catch anybody this week, but obviously I snuck a like in there.
Also Colt Cabana did like a big giant dive as well. And nobody, like a big giant, like, Ohihara moonsault, and nobody caught him on that either. This one was close, but the fact that Rey Fénix, as you mentioned, was the first one they didn't catch in the dive, I wish, like, he impaled himself on something, you know?
You're acting like he shorted you on a deposit or something.
Not me, but the people that I enjoy and consider, you know, part of my wrestling family.
Mm, okay.
So, yeah, fuck Rey Fénix. But the Orange Cassidy match was good, you know. I'm not saying that was because of Orange Cassidy.
Yeah. All right, what do you got?
So, you know, I've been a wrestling fan longer than many people have been alive. I like wrestling. There's a lot of people I like in the world of wrestling. And I've mentioned this before. You know, some of my favorite wrestlers are people like Ric Flair and Mick Foley and Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty was good. Dusty was always, you know, Dusty. You know, take him for what he will. Toward the end of his life, Roddy Piper was doing a podcast where he was trying to start, like, fake fights with Steve Austin and stuff. And still one of the last people of vestiges holding on to kayfabe in, like, 2012 or 13 or whenever it was that he passed. But I think to myself a lot of times when it comes to people like Ric Flair and sadly Mick Foley, the longer that they stick around, the more and more stuff they do today makes me less of a fan of them then. You know, Mick Foley had that strong run in 95 to 96 in ECW. That's going to be tough to top. You know, Ric Flair had a good run there, but, you know, every drunken escapade or every commercial he does for like a fifth rate sub shop, you know, it's just like one less Ric Flair match I get to like. but also, as a young man, early teenager, one of my favorite wrestlers was The Undertaker. And, you know, Undertaker should have hung up the boots a while ago, but, you know, he kind of redeemed himself with the Bone Dog match. But then this week, it was revealed that Undertaker, a.k.a. Uncle Taker, tip to Final Wrestling Place, Tim and Marcus, that Undertaker is a Twitter vanity searcher. And it's done. We're done. I can't call myself ever a fan of The Undertaker. This was too much. Him going to meet LeBron James after a Cavaliers game in full Undertaker garb, only to be stood up by LeBron James, not nearly as embarrassing as being a 60-year-old man who vanity searches. So I don't like that I can't be a fan of The Undertaker anymore. It makes me very sad.
So it's just the vanity searching? That's the... You're okay with the borderline MAGA chud stuff?
Well, he was vanity searching people calling him a MAGA chud, and it's not like we should be surprised that all of our wrestling favorites who are age 30 or age 40 to 70 are MAGA chuds. Even him rubbing it in our face, and I'm like, it's not like I'm surprised. I can kind of separate myself from, you know, whatever his politics are, even though in his stupid documentary on the World Wrestling Entertainment Network, no longer award-winning because of this. Wearing, like, weird pro-Trump Pulp Fiction mashup shirts and shit. And I'm just like, oh my god, what a loser. But I'm not surprised. Like, he's a 60-year-old man. This is what 60-year-old men do.
Yeah.
But 60-year-old men, no one should be vanity searching yourself on Twitter. It never ends up good. Have you ever vanity searched yourself and found positive things that people were saying about you? You're doing it because you want to see the bad things people are saying about you so that you can, like, I don't know, like, call them out? Like, make an example of them? I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to do vanity searches. I know a lot of wrestlers, there's even some that, you know, I hold in high regard that do vanity searching. But, like, somebody the caliber of The Undertaker, like, it just boggles my mind that A, he cares, and B, like, he's got that kind of time on his hands. It just, it none of it makes sense, and it does seem very, very weird.
Yep.
Ah, rest in peace, Uncle Taker.
Right. And buy the shirt from our T Public store commemorating the Uncle Taker.
Yes, Marcus has got a baby. He needs baby clothes.
That's right. I think you could buy it on a baby onesie. Ooh. So if you buy it on a baby onesie and send it to Marcus, he'll probably take a picture of his baby wearing the Uncle Taker onesie.
Awesome. That is Final Wrestling Place. Give them a listen. That counts as your plug.
You've mentioned like six times already. Go ahead.
All right. My final dislike this week. And Joe, this is the part of the show where I'm really grasping, so bear with me here. On Monday Night Raw, we had the Women's Tag Team Championship defended. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross defending against the Iconics. And the reason this is in my dislikes is twofold. First of all, we had another one of those recent head-scratching finishes to a match, and this was... I believe it was Billy Kay. Let me see. Not that it matters, but no, Peyton Royce kept throwing Alexa into the ring post and got DQ'd for it. I did not realize that that was a DQ-able offense, but that is how the match ended. So that's reason number one that was it's in my dislikes. But reason number two is we had a backstage vignette shortly thereafter where Billy Kay slapped Peyton Royce. And I'm like, all right. We love the Iconics. They're the most over women in all of sports and entertainment. And you are starting to lay the groundwork of a potential breakup that absolutely nobody wants. So that is just feels like they're personally spiting me. And it's in my dislikes because of that.
All right. You're stretching.
What? I give two valid reasons to my dislikes. A botched or weird finish. And a bad storyline decision.
I'll say this. I'm all for weird finishes like that that no one sees anymore. I want to see a finish where the referee disqualifies a guy because for being on the top rope after a five count. Because every time someone goes to the top rope, referee starts a five count. And always the guy jumps before the count of five. Well, what would happen if they stayed up there until the count of five? I guess the referee would have to disqualify him, right?
Do they still count it in WWE? I never really paid much attention.
I don't know. I assume they should. They do, maybe.
Or maybe taking a tag without holding the tag rope and you're just disqualified?
Right, and see that? Okay, and that's another thing. Like, it's an unspoken rule. In WWE, like, the announcers don't say it, but I think you get, like, one or two saves in a tag match. And after the third save of you breaking up a pinfall when you're not the legal man, that's technically a disqualification. But they don't do it all the time. They do it sometimes. Because that's why it's an unofficial rule. And I think somebody mentioned, might have been on Pod Van Dam recently, that... Aubrey Edwards was talking about having like merch for the referees that it would be the official AEW rulebook, which they rightfully said would be a disaster because then you would have nerds combing over that rulebook and pointing everything out, and then they would do it just as a rib on JR. You know what I mean? Like, it would be like who could break the most rules in the official AEW rulebook to make JR just like shit himself during commentary. That's why I wear dark slacks. That's fresh. Anyway. Yeah, but I'm all for interesting and unique finishes that you don't see. And yeah, and like, they should have had a thing where like the referee maybe clarified it. I don't remember what they said exactly on commentary about it. But technically it's excessive force. Even though it's outside the ring. Like, you're outside the ring, I could hit you with a chair. That technically should be a disqualification, but it's the referee's discretion.
I don't like it.
All right.
So your last dislike.
Let's get to my final dislike. And I would have to say, sadly, that this is maybe the first and hopefully the last time. No, I've mentioned them before on the show. But this is going to be the last time that we hopefully have to mention CZW on the show. Combat Zone Wrestling. Recently, they came under some fire for releasing direct-to-pay-per-view reclippings of some of their matches from CZW itself and their WSU promotion. I don't know what it stands for, Women's Sports Uncensored or whatever it is. But more importantly than a majority of the competitors' names spelled wrong, but the two shows were entitled... CZW Girls, Top Heavy and Tough, and CZW Girls, Hot and Sweaty. Now, a lot of the women involved in these matches got very upset about their portrayal in this way, essentially being marketed as softcore pornography. And, you know, if you try hard enough, pretty much everything's softcore pornography. You don't really have to try that hard. But I think it's more of the exploitative nature of this. CZW released a bullshit statement saying that they sold a bunch of their footage to another company 2 years ago, and it's that other company who is doing this, not them, which is a very flimsy excuse because they didn't sell that footage to this other company. This other company purchased part of CZW so that DJ Hyde wouldn't lose the company, and they're the ones with DJ's blessing doing this. Now, I'm of several minds of this, that is this scummy behavior? Yes. Is this the scummiest thing that CZW has done ever? No. Is this the scummiest thing that CZW has done in the last 12 months? No. This is just the most recent one. So I do sadly have to put the onus on a lot of the wrestlers themselves, because I've heard conversations both privately and publicly of wrestlers taking bookings in CZW or questioning. It's like, oh, I don't know why XYZ company is giving me a hard time because I also want to work for CZW. It's like, well, maybe because CZW is and has been a dead brand since 2004, and I know other people will argue with me. I might say that CZW has been a dead brand since 2001. I'm being generous and saying 2004. But you have a nostalgia for CZW from when you were a kid and you were tape trading, and you want to be able to say that you wrestled CZW. But I know more people that lost bookings than gained bookings by doing CZW in the last 10 years. The number of people who have gained bookings from CZW, I could say I can count their names on one hand and still have enough fingers left over to pick pickles off of a hot dog when it came to me. So I will also then say this, once wrestling comes back, I would not be surprised to see CZW to try to turn this into an angle. And I would not be surprised to see several of the people who were the most vocal in shouting down CZW for doing this, whether you were exploited or not, whether you were the people who stood up for the exploited or not. I could see way more people playing along with CZW. It's not like DJ Hyde is some Svengali where he convinces people to do these things with wild dreams or whatever. It's the same reason that people in 2020 want to have sex with Sonny. Not because Sonny is super hot in 2020, it's so they could say they had sex with Sonny and not say what year it was when they did. This is, I want to say that I wrestled in CZW, but not in front of zero fans. And CZW has been ahead of the current trend of wrestling in front of no fans for years before everyone else has come around. So hopefully this will be the nail in the coffin of CZW and we'll never have to mention them again. And they can just go away and never be heard from again. But they won't be. I just won't be mentioning them on this show. I just want to mention it here to say a lot of people have taken bookings in CZW the last 10 years and lost bookings for it. When CZW returns, I guarantee there will be people that will go back and be part of an angle that plays off this controversy. And I say, shame on you, wrestlers who go back to CZW. Shame on you, wrestlers who sit there and scratch your head and wonder why you lost bookings for taking CZW bookings. And shame on you, fans, that still say, maybe now it'll be good. It won't be. It'll never be good again. Move on.
And I think I don't know much about the situation beyond what you just talked about, but I'll say that like somebody in 2020 who wants to work for CZW based on like nostalgia from 20 years ago, that's like saying I want to work for WWECW because I remember the old one. But that's actually detrimental to ECW in saying that. You know what I mean? That's an insult to ECW on sci-fi.
Listen, I enjoyed ECW up until sadly its dying days. Mm. But ECW, as anyone remembers it, died in the summer of 1997. Once they became a blatant shill and developmental territory for World Wrestling Entertainment, where up until that point, for the previous two or so years, they were only a on-the-sly shill for WWE and developmental territory for WWE. But that was when they became a full-fledged one and still tried to market themselves as the Outlaws and the Rebels and all this other stuff. ECW stopped being good in mid-1997, you ain't going to prove me wrong. There might be one or two matches that happened during that time frame, maybe one or two angles that happened during that time frame. I do have a soft spot for Raven returning on the second episode of TNT or TNN after leaving WCW. But other than that, no. Mid-1997 was the end of ECW.
All right, no disagreements here. With that being said, Joe, which was your favorite show this week, AEW or NXT?
NXT.
Why is that?
The Rhea Ripley versus Io Shirai match was really good. I really liked the aforementioned Drake Maverick and Kushida matches. They did a lot better job of building up toward NXT In Your House. Beware of Dog. Whatever the hell it's called. Then AEW did in their go-home show for their pay-per-view this weekend. Long matches, bad promos from people who are good promos. The aforementioned catch sloppy dives. The lame closing shot of everyone posing and doing their taunts on the in the end zone to close out the show. Yeah, I don't know, man. AEW just felt wrong this week. NXT, not much better, but better than AEW in comparison.
Well, I was going to go NXT initially. A lot of things you just said. That Scarlett sang a little bit less during her intro, which is bonus points. Didn't completely stop singing, so she loses points there. But for many of the cheesy reasons you bashed AEW, I kind of enjoyed it more. I don't have much to base it on, but like coming out of the 2-hour show, which one, you know, gave me more chuckle and more entertainment? I'm going to stick with AEW this week.
Wow. We are finally, I think, breaking the pack here because I'm tied up with the same number. And I think you picked AEW the last 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
So you're two up there.
I'm a pants-shitting AEW mark now.
Oh, boy. Well, this Saturday you could shit your pants in the privacy of your own home watching their $50 pay-per-view.
I'll just watch it in the bathroom. Save some time.
So before we get to that segment of the show, we do have, of course, the season finale of Dark Side of the Ring to discuss. And this was the final. Again, I always hate like whatever they say the final... The full episode titles of these things are, it's the Owen Hart episode.
Yeah. Was it the final days of Owen Hart?
Yeah.
Joe, I really like this episode. Yeah. Like it hit me hard, probably like more so than any other episode. Cause obviously there's been a lot of episodes over two seasons that dealt with, you know, the death of people that, you know, we grew up watching, but like this episode, maybe it was because we never really got, because of the circumstances, any kind of Owen Hart tributes or career retrospectives from the WWE. So, like, your Owen content has been few and far between over the years, unless you were to piece it together by watching stuff on the network. But, like, just the very little, and I wish there was more of Owen's history. Like, this could have very easily been a 2-hour retrospective, but... early Owen history was great, and just the obviously the stuff about his death, those police photos, I had never seen those before, and like it was difficult to get through because obviously I knew what happened, you know, we all did, but like I had never seen a live interview with Martha, never with her kids, and man, fuck Vince. You know, is the biggest thing I could get coming out of this. Like, I cannot imagine you being a WWE mark that sides with Vince McMahon, you know, and is somehow against, you know, the family of Owen Hart. But yeah, I came out of this angry and like sad and shocked. It was my favorite episode of the season, and not for good reasons.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I really like this episode a lot. You know, we've discussed before that usually a week after the episodes come out, there's like the longer edit that goes out.
Yeah.
And I know on the Vice TV YouTube page, sometimes they'll put like some of the stuff that got edited out just as kind of like one hitters or two hitters and stuff. And watching this, I was a little sad. Like, this could have been like a 2-hour thing, like you said. Yeah. I wish they got Mick Foley, and I'm sure there was reasons why Mick Foley wasn't interviewed for this, you know, maybe because it was just too difficult to deal with, and I completely understand that. But, like, Mick Foley had so many great Owen stories in his book, and, you know, they seem to get along quite a bit and have very similar mentalities when it comes to what wrestling is and how you should be involved with wrestling. And, you know, there's all those stories of Owen's ribs and goofing around, and I really wanted more of that in this. And I think, you know, it didn't need it because Owen's already a sympathetic character coming into this, but I would have liked to seen more of that dealt with than, you know, obviously the family stuff. But again, I understand why they presented it in the way that it is. They only have 40 some odd minutes with commercials to put things up, but this is going to be one of those episodes that I go back and watch when, like, the longer episode is out there.
Yeah.
To see what else they put in there. Now, I may have told the story in the show, but I would be remiss not to tell it here. You know, so obviously this hit me because this was the era of, like, you know, some of my peak fandom, like in the late 90s into early 2000s. But last year was the 20-year anniversary of this. So there was a lot more about this online a year ago than there is now, surprisingly. More podcasts, more interviews, more everything. So it was much more fresh in my mind, like a lot of the stuff that they mentioned about, like, who they hired to do the rigging, like what they used for the rig to hook Owen up. But actually seeing the rig in Martha's hands was, like, shocking. To see, like, she still has that, and to see how wimpy this thing was. And then when you compare it to the footage of, like, how Sting used to do his rappelling in, and the one or two times before this that Owen did it, and, like, how this is very clearly negligence by the World Wrestling Entertainment in regarding this. But back when this happened live, this was the swerve era. This was, you know, everything's, you know, pulling you one way and going the other way. Watching this pay-per-view live, I thought that it was fake. You know, because we had been conditioned that, like, people are using their real names, people are doing whatever it is. And then when Jim Ross comes on and says, you know, Owen Hart as the Blue Blazer was supposed to do something, you know, make a superhero-like entrance, and this is not part of the show, this is not a wrestling angle. In that era, we were taught, when they come out on TV and say, this is not part of the show, this is not a wrestling angle, it is a wrestling angle.
Yeah.
So I'm watching the paper, you know, I'm watching the pay-per-view, and I'm like, oh, there's going to be some weird payoff or some sort of skit or whatever it is. And I'll never forget. It was after a 4-on-4 elimination match between the Ministry of Darkness and the Union. Can you name all four members of the Union, Adam?
I don't even remember the Union.
The Union was Mick Foley, Big Show, Ken Shamrock, and Test. All,
of course.
All former people that were wronged by the corporation and or the Ministry of Darkness and or the corporate ministry. And I forget what Union stood for, but it's like each letter stood for something. It was out of a Mick Foley promo on an episode of Sunday Night Heat. Anyway, 4-on-4 elimination match. Mick Foley's the sole survivor of the match. He's going around and slapping fans' hands. And as he's saying this is when Jim Ross tells us that Owen Hart is dead. I had 5 or 6 people over my house. This happens. They officially say Owen Hart has passed away. And everybody in the room looks at me because I didn't believe it. And now they actually said that he's dead. And the first thing I thought was I had to call my friend Pete. My friend Pete, who I grew up with. He was one of my high school friends. He was currently away at college, and I had to call him because Owen was his favorite wrestler, and I knew he wasn't watching the pay-per-view because he was a poor college kid at the time, and I had to call him to tell him before he saw whatever. And again, it's 1999. Like, who knows how or what or when you're going to see something, you know? The internet was just percolating and bubbling, whatever it is. But it's just one of those things that, like, is etched in my memory, like that whole night of watching this pay-per-view. But the other thing, of course, and, you know, not being on social media as much, I don't get a chance to see it, but I definitely get to hear about it. I hope with, Martha Hart, Oge Hart coming out on this show and saying, we never will want Owen in the WWE Hall of Fame, that this stops people, not fans, because fans are stupid and going to do whatever they want, but hopefully this stops the people in WWE from doing this and keep saying at the Hall of Fame speeches that Owen should be in there. Yes, Owen was your friend. Yes, you still have a good relationship with the WWE. If you are that good of a friend and have that special relationship in your mind with Owen Hart, then you should pay respects to his family and stop making it a thing that you, for your own selfish whatever reasons, want Owen in the Hall of Fame. You're putting undue stress on this poor family's life because of your selfishness.
1,000%. Like, I see very little of it. I just hear about it, but like the I mentioned before, the WWE fans that are coming to, Vince's aid and like defending the company and disparaging Martha Hart. Like, she's, how dare she rob us of our chance to get Owen Hart in the Hall of Fame? Like, the Hall of Fame, it's meaningless. It's a TV show. You know, it's like there's no criteria for getting in. The best, the best people aren't always going to be in it. And some people that far from deserve it, that kind of distinction are in it. So who cares? Leave it alone. I'm very fired up about like just the fact that people out there exist that, like you said, that are just constantly ragging on the Harts and saying, we deserve the chance to watch a television show where people, put you in the Hall of Fame. Like, let it go.
Absolutely.
And let me ask you this regarding, because I mean, I saw the pay-per-view live, 20 years ago when it happened. Where in that timeline, you mentioned the elimination match happening immediately after, where did the Jeff Jarrett and Deborah interview happen? Did that happen immediately after the fall?
Immediately after the fall.
Okay, because I think that, like, based on that interview and the fact that they were both, like, weeping,
yep.
I at no point thought it was a work. I understand, yeah, we're in the era where Nitro would be like, oh, this isn't on the scripts, but I think
WWE used to do that shit too, man.
I know,
this was like peak Russo shit,
Yeah, no, I understand, but I just think that, I'm not saying that it's foolish not to have thought that it might have been a work, but I think that that interview segment, that removed any doubt that I might have had at the time. But, anyways, I mean, we had two episodes about Benoit, one episode that pretty much focused on the rise of Chris Benoit, so to speak, and an episode about the murder-suicide. This could have very easily been an episode, just one episode on everything up to the Blue Blazer, return to gimmick, and then an episode about the investigation and death and all that, I think it would have been good to have had more of the glory days of Owen Hart, focused on, because basically it starts, they show a little bit of him in Calgary, and then he's in WWE as the Blue Blazer. And then they're like, all of a sudden he's having that WrestleMania match with Brett. And then, we're post Montreal screw job. And then we get him being the Blue Blazer again. So obviously there was a lot of, high energy, new foundation, Blackheart, King of Hearts, a lot of versions of Owen, the Slammy award winning Owen Hart, a lot of stuff that I would just like to see given more time,
I agree. But I'm very happy with what we got.
Yeah, no, whatever we could have gotten was, better than nothing.
Yep.
But I don't know, maybe next season.
Well, speaking of next season.
Yes.
Next week, Adam and I are going to give what we think should be in the next season of Dark Side of the Ring. Now, I listened to the podcast that the two creators of the show do with Conrad Thompson.
Okay.
And there's a lot of hemming and hawing about, we don't know if there'll be a season 3. We can't travel, and so on and so forth. I think for Vice, this is like the most watched show of all of anything on Vice. It's the thing that gets the most traction. It's the thing that most casual fans watch over actual current day professional wrestling. So we will see a season 3, probably not immediately, just because like they can't travel to go like interview people or whatever it is. And it wouldn't be the same to do like Skype videos with people as part of the talking head segments on the documentary.
Yeah.
But next week, Adam and I are coming here with 5 each.
Oh, please, come on, like 3 or 4.
I was going to say, because I currently have about 8.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I have 2, but I haven't given it a ton of thought yet.
All right. So
let's do 4 each.
4? a lot of good stuff's getting cut. I see two I have to dump already. Great episodes. You know what I mean? Like, if we're talking a list of five, I'm like, okay, I could play with this list a little bit, and the list could probably grow.
Well, you know what, Joe? It's our show. Why don't you have five? I'm gonna commit to four, and if I maybe squeeze out a fifth one, we'll see what happens.
Let's do four each.
Okay.
And we'll take recommendations. Like, you're the social media person, so you like have a tweet or something, and like, hey, everyone, reply to this. I know Pod Van Dam did this on their voicemail a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Of what it should be. I think it was like right before the Herb Abrams episode of what should be on Dark Side of the Ring. But like I said, I got like eight good ones. I could do the next season already. Let's go.
All right, cool. So next week we'll come to bring our ideas for season three.
Yeah.
And no restrictions. So it could be like anything that you want. Just want to throw that out there because my stuff might be a little fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Now I will say this. I don't have the easiest one to do on here, and which is Vince himself.
Yeah.
Like, that's the easiest one. You could do all eight episodes or 10 episodes of a season just on Vince.
Just call it The Crimes of Vince McMahon.
Well, again, crimes is a strong word.
Crimes and
misdemeanors. I think just by saying Vince McMahon, you know that there are crimes involved.
Crimes against humanity, good taste.
Yeah, yeah.
Fashion.
Right. Like, and that thing, every episode is like, here's his crimes and here's his lies and here's his bad fashion and here's all of his failed business ventures and here's all the drug stuff and here's all the this, right? You know? Anyway. So again, Vince is not on my list.
All right. No more talking about it before you stooge off more of your ideas.
Right, because we do have a couple more things to discuss, starting with.
Is Sami Zayn skanking down to the ring? Is Kofi Kingston doing his thing? Will Ruby Riott be on the show? Will Daniel Bryan jump? No, no, no. Is it the big dog's yard? Let's find out. Does Joe know the card?
That's right. Even in these horrible times, these... What is it? Tough, troubling times? What is it?
I'm not sure. I have to consult with the soon-to-be-coming t-shirt to find out if it's troubling times, Todd.
Okay, right, it's troubling times. That's what it is. It's time for Does Joe Know the Card? Because there is a $50 pay-per-view this Saturday.
Oh, yes. Double or Nothing 2, Electric Boogaloo. According to Wikipedia, the most trusted source in all of wrestling news... there are 9 announced matches for Double or Nothing, although I will say one of them is on the pre-show and one of them may or may not happen.
Okay. I think I know this. So let's go. Okay. We have the Battle of the Hot Johns as Moxley takes on Brody Lee for the AEW Platinum Belt. We've got defending...
Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to say defending champion Brody Lee, because possession's 9/10 of the law.
That's right. We then have the finals of the TV title tournament, with the title being presented by Mike Tyson, as the 3-star general himself, Cody, takes on the Murder Hawk, Lance Archer.
Yep.
We also have the Stampede Scramble match. Is that what they're calling it?
No.
It's the match that's going to happen on a football field where it's the Elite and broken Matt Hardy taking on Jericho and his goons.
Okay, so your Stadium Stampede match.
Stadium Stampede match. Okay. Then we have Hikaru Shida taking on Nyla Rose for the ladies title in a no holds barred, no disqualification match for no reason.
Yes.
There's a reason the match is happening. There's no reason that it's no disqualification, no count out, or whatever the hell it is.
Well, there was a table spot to finish up their tag team match on AEW this week, so I guess that's why.
Correct. We have Best Friends taking on Private Party.
That is the pre-show match.
Okay. technically, maybe, kind of. Mm-hmm. Chris Statlander taking on Britt Baker.
Yes, and that's if Britt Baker still has a working knee.
Right, that's tentative because, again, she may not have a working knee. Just so you know, you could still stooge off things if you're on the injury list. I'm just saying. Sean Spears versus Dustin Rhodes.
Yes.
We have the 9-person thing for the ladder match, where everyone has to duck their heads and somebody puts up a thumb, and then one person goes around and puts a poker chip on top of their thumb, and then whoever has the poker chip on top of their thumb is the murderer, and then all the other people that it's a combination Royal Rumble and Money in the Bank match, and this is one of those matches where other people have said this, that this should end just with two people in the ring. Like, yeah. It should never get to the point where all 9 people come out.
I'm very confused on the rules, so we'll see what happens. But do you want to take a shot at who's in the match?
Okay. We have Rey Fénix. We have Orange Cassidy. Yep. We have Colt Cabana. We have Kip Sabian. We have Franklin Kazarian. We have Scorpion Sky. We have Darby Allin, who should win this. And I know there's like a mystery person. I can't remember who the 9th person is.
Luchasaurus,
right. Mm-hmm. And MJF versus Jungle Boy is the other match?
Nah, Jungle Boy, Jack Evans, or Jack Perry? What is it?
It's Jungle Boy, Jack Perry.
Jack Perry, okay.
Jingle all the way, Jack.
But yeah, that's the entire show.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I might try to watch this. I don't feel like spending $50. It was nice to split it with DJ and Brett and going up their house. Mm. But no one's allowed to leave their houses to watch things with other people anymore. I know friends of mine have pushed things out saying that, like, hey, maybe we can get on Zoom and watch this, you know? Mm-hmm. But I typically can't start watching a pay-per-view until like 9:30 on a weekend because I do stuff with my family.
Oh, weird flex.
Yeah, real weird flex. yeah, I don't know. Nothing really stands out as like I'll be upset if I miss this.
I do want to see
for Orange Cassidy to win the poker chip thing, but it has to be Darby Allin. In my head, Cody, of course, gets to be the first TV champion. Darby wins the thing, he cashes in the chip, and he beats Cody for the TV title.
It could be wrong, but I doubt it because it's Wikipedia, but it says that the casino ladder match is for a future AEW World Championship match.
You could just say it's for any title you want.
Well, and they also said that like the winner of that would get a shot at the TV title next week on Dynamite. So I'm very confused. The graphics have been inconsistent.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to see the casino ladder match because, as you said, Orange Cassidy's in it. And Darby Allin will be great. I don't know. Moxley against Lee should be a good time. But, yeah, not much. I mean, Best Friends versus Private Party should be good. And out of morbid curiosity, the Stadium Stampede match, because I like matches in weird places.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the end of AEW trying to do this shit. They did a really bad job at shooting just them brawling in the end zone.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how shitty it's going to look when they're trying to do this all over the entirety of a football field. It's going to look like shit. They're going to miss so many spots. It's just going to be a disaster waiting to happen. And, like, I guess from a train wreck aspect, I'm kind of excited to see that part of it. But, yeah, I don't know. Sammy Guevara will bump and die for everyone. And other than that, everyone will do their, like, shitty touring match, bullshit, whatever.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. Just so everybody knows, the pay-per-view, we're not going to say it's your show homework for next week, but we're not going to do any show homework this coming week since we have to watch the pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's a good point because we've been adding the extra stuff in there because I know it's been kind of tough to get through Raw and SmackDown, but I feel like a pay-per-view we're almost obligated to watch.
Yeah.
to discuss on the show, to catch up on whatever it is. So to watch the pay-per-view plus an extra show off independentwrestling.tv or WWE Network or whatever the hell it is, just feels like it might be a lot. So whenever there's like a pay-per-view, and I think, what is it, not next week, but the week after, is the NXT and Fastlane.
Are they both the same weekend? Takeover and Fastlane? Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Right, so like when that comes up, the weekend of the 6th and 7th or 7th and 8th or whatever it is, I might be wrong on that. Hang on, let me go check worldwrestlingentertainment.com.
While you're doing that, Joe, I will tell you that even though my next pick is a ways away, I already have it decided in my head.
Oh, okay.
It's actually what we would have been talking about now or tonight, if not for the sudden arrival of what we are talking about, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So it's already in the bank. It's in my back pocket.
Oh, so okay. So NXT in your house is the weekend of the 7th.
Okay.
And then Backlash is the 14th.
Mm.
So those two weekends we won't be doing bonus shows, just because there's extra shit to watch already with the NXT show and the Backlash.
It's a fluid situation. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can go that long without watching something from the award-winning independentwrestling.tv.
Well, you could watch stuff at your at your own leisure, you know?
I only watch stuff if it's going to be on the show. No wasted efforts. That's what I'm known for.
Can't be bare minimum Adam, because that doesn't sound the same.
No.
Definitely can't be maximum effort Brian or Adam or whatever the fuck. Somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah. Minimal? I don't know.
Yeah. Medium. All right, so. Didn't mean to step on your joke.
Nah, it wasn't going to be funny anyways. We're good.
All right. Let's talk about what our homework was, and it wasn't really homework because I had a good time watching it, and that was LVAC and Violent Miracle present Let's Be Responsible, the best of Let's Hang Out, with some new promos and stuff in there from some of your favorite LVAC Let's Hang Out luminaries.
Yeah, obviously, I picked this for many reasons. Number one, because we are the unofficial official podcast of the LVAC. Secondly, because obviously you've been to all of these, you've been on commentary for them all, and I have attended most of them. Mm-hmm. I did not attend the first two, so there were matches on here that I had not yet seen. And for the ones that I did see already, it's nice to have seen them with commentary and, you know, from a vantage point other than where I was standing. So obviously this show you can purchase for as little as a dollar or for as much as like $1 million bajillion if you want to. And all the proceeds go to some good charities. I have the card listing in front of me, Joe. Do you want me to go ahead and kind of run it down?
Yeah, well, let's go match by match, talk by talk, whatever.
Absolutely. All right. So one of the best things about this is in between every match, you get kind of like a little promo cut, you know, for lack of better terms, and start things off with we have Rex Lawless in a pretty sweet bathrobe and the Winged Eagle belt, which is not the Winged Eagle belt. But he's basically cutting a promo, which was interrupted by Bryce Remsburg. Now, Bryce, while he did not have kind words to say about Dan Champion, he kind of sowed the seeds of his corruption that we see later on in the show. So I just want to throw that out there. But that's how we start things off, is with Rex Lawless and Bryce Remsburg.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, I got nothing to say about any of the promos. It was just like, you know, everybody kind of having some fun. I do have to say, of course, Dan's promo was the longest. Everyone else kept it like a tight minute and change. Dan was almost like 3 minutes.
It felt like it was a lot longer.
Yeah.
All right. So the very first match was, I believe, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, a six-way match with obviously friend of the show, Proletariat Boar of Moldova, as he was known at that time, versus The Whisper, versus Brave Billy Avery, versus Bojack, versus Marion Fontaine, versus Jakob Hammermeyer.
I just want to interrupt and say the official title of this match was the Bugsy Schmidt Invitational Six-Person Scramble.
Now, you'll have to fill me in because this is pre-podcast, so I was not attending these shows. Who is Bugsy Schmidt, or do I not want to know?
It's a goofy thing Mantis thinks up to call these matches.
Oh, fair enough. All right. Now, because I want to encourage folks to go out and still purchase this, even without us talking about or forcing you guys to do it, I don't really necessarily want to go over the winners of every one of these matches, but I just want to kind of call out a couple spots. Obviously, we had the Irresistible Force and the Immovable Object. We had the Boar and Billy Avery facing off at one point in this match, which was a highlight for me. But a couple hosses in here and a couple great spots. It was a fun match. I enjoyed this. Like I said, I had not seen it before.
It's going to be tough. So remember at the top of the show, I said there'll never be a Chikara podcast. Reviewing this could quite possibly be the reason why there'll never be a Chikara podcast, because I'm friends with a lot of these people, and while I did enjoy the match, this match was too long. They could have shaved like 5 minutes off this match. I say, and I'm a proponent of this, I've said this on the show here before, I've said this privately to people who run shows, that when you post up your lineup, whatever you initially had as the time given to each match, if I get there before anyone else in the show does, I'm purposely going and shaving 5 minutes off whatever time you wrote, because invariably, especially in a match like this, everyone goes over their time, everyone wants to get their shit in, everyone wants to do whatever, and, you know, a match that you give, because you're like, oh, there's six guys in it, everybody's got to get something in, I'll put 10 to 15. Okay, guess what side of that they're going to go? Do you think these guys are going to go 10? Or do you think they're going to go 15? They're probably going to go like 17 or 18, actually, at the end of the day. This was early in the LVAC booking of shows. Things would get better. There was no bad action in the match. But I'm like, that could have been trimmed up. We could have got to that quicker. We could have did this. Why did we waste so much time doing this? Blah, 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 blah. I looked at this with a very critical eye, and I'm going to get this out of the way as well. This was the first time that I've watched an entire show with my commentary on it. And I hate when my voice gets high when I'm calling things. And this show is the Rosetta Stone for all of my dumb inside comments and inside jokes. If you did watch this and you have a question about something I say on commentary, the standing offer of anything that I allude to or mention or I tiptoe around on the show, all you have to do is ask me and I'll tell you.
All right. Well,
like, I'm not going to come out and offer the information.
Sure.
But if you ask me a pointed question, I will give you a direct answer.
All right. Now, a couple things real quick regarding that. You mentioned you were going to go over this with a more critical eye. I might be a little bit biased towards the positive side because I've enjoyed every LVAC show I've gone to. And I'll say that I don't feel, and I'm not trying to shill a charity show here, I do not feel like any of these matches felt overly long. You know, yes, some of them were longer than others. Obviously, when Dan Champion's on the screen, you're like, please let it end. But, you know, I never felt like any of the matches overstayed their welcome. And yeah, I think that that comes from you, you know, wanting a nice tight show, being on the production side of it. But as like a casual fan, I didn't feel like that match or really any other jump out as being very long. Does that
right,
make sense?
And I don't want you to think that I thought this was a bad match or any of the matches.
No, not at all.
But again, we say this is early on in the thing as we get to the most recent show from the LVAC, which was, I think there's one or two matches, maybe one match, definitely, which we'll talk about, the Kevin Blackwood versus Cheeseburger match. That show in its entirety is my favorite match because at that point, the LVAC guys and Mantis and whoever else is involved had been doing shows now for a little over 2 years, and they finally got it. They finally got the rhythm. They got the feel. They got the flow of the show. And again, not a bad match, didn't overstay its welcome, but as I'm watching it, I was just like, that could have been tightened up, that could have been loosened up, like that spot didn't need to be there, but like that sort of thing. It's the critical mind. That's
okay. And just real quick regarding your commentary, obviously I've been to several live LVAC shows, and the only matches that I saw prior to this on television were the ones that a certain somebody was uploading to YouTube or on his Instagram. So I had never seen any of this with your commentary on it before. So I will throw this out there. I did enjoy your commentary on all the matches. So
I give myself a C- overall.
I give you a solid B.
All right. I'll take that.
All right. So right after the opening match, we have a quick PSA from Kalix, where he was teaching about social distancing. So go ahead and get your advice from him on that. And then the second match on the show was for the Pierogi Championship of Pennsylvania, I believe.
The Lehigh Valley.
Lehigh Valley.
And exclusive naming rights to Santoro Frank's vegan pierogies.
Yes. So we had the plant-based athlete, Dan Champion, versus the pierogi-based athlete, Puff. And out of all these matches that I want to avoid giving you the finish of, this one we've talked about the most, so it's impossible to hide. But this is the episode the match where Dan Champion dies.
Right. Puff gives Dan the Rikishi driver, pile driver sort of thing. And Dan dies and lied to me after the match. And I asked him how he was doing, and he said he was fine. And then 2 days later, once the adrenaline wore off, he wasn't fine anymore.
Yeah.
But this match was perfect. You know what I mean? The both guys did good promos to build up this match. I thought the finish was good. And I liked the fact that they teased Dan breaking the trophy. And Kevin Blackwood came in to save the trophy and celebrate with his friend, which was the type of swerve in wrestling I like. Because anytime that there's a cake, the heel's face has to be smashed into it. Anytime there's a trophy, the trophy needs to be smashed. I like the subversion of your expectations here.
Yes, plus I think the trophy rental was due back the next day.
Listen, it's not like it's a discount tiger costume or something. Come on.
All right, so next up we had a little promo from Willow Nightingale talking about how important it is to stay positive during quarantine, so that was a cool little promo. Our next match was Chris Statlander and Riley Shepard versus the C-Stars, Ashley Vox and Delmi Exo. And just real quick, as an aside, I want to steal a phrase from Sammy Guevara and say, C-Stars, hit me up. But anyways, fun little match. I don't know about you. I didn't feel like it went on very long. Everybody kind of got their spots in. But the C-Stars retained, or not retained, but the C-Stars won. I believe Riley joined their side and turned on Chris Statlander, or do I have it the other way around?
No, you're correct.
Okay.
And we'll talk off air about your hit me up remarks there, Adam. I think you're going to be in for a rude awakening.
Nah.
And I don't mean Rick Rude selling of an atomic drop, neither. Chris Statlander woefully miscast as the heel in this match.
Yeah.
They could have went straight heel on both sides. They could have went, you know, as we talked earlier in the show about how it's like both baby faces and maybe there's like a little bit of heel action there. I'm not sure who was in charge of, I'm not sure who the agent on this match was. But I'll just say, knowing what we know now about who and what Chris Statlander could do, she was just miscast as the heel in the match.
Yeah. I feel like it wasn't clear at many points who the heels and the faces were in that match, but I still enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We had a Puff PSA about checking in on your friends during the pandemic and quarantine. And then next up, we have the first match from the LVAC Mall Madness. We had Tony Deppen and Missile Assault Man teaming up with Mr. X, the mysterious Mr. X. We still haven't figured out who that is. Versus Ultramantis Black, Hollow Wicked, and Frightmare. This is another one of those matches that I saw live, and I did not have the benefit of seeing the camera angles because this match spilled out into the Lehigh Valley Mall and into the store next door, where Ultramantis allies, Hollow Wicked and Frightmare, were trapped in there along with Gary, and then they were all left there to die, I assume. But so I did not get to see that from my vantage point in the Foot Locker, but it was cool to actually see it on video.
This match is great. I love it. Felt like an old Chikara match, of course, with a twist, as everyone's a lot better than, you know, whatever prime era of Chikara watching you had. First and only appearance of Tony Deppen. Missile Assault Man, I miss you. Don't forget, we're still... I miss seeing him. I miss seeing him wrestle. But we still get to talk. We talk Tony Schiavone every week. He's a big Tony Schiavone guy. And like I said, this is me nitpicking again.
Ugh.
It's nothing about the match. I This match, I think, has the higher profile, so I understand why they put it on here. I would have put the 10-person from Sokol's on here, where Dasher and his crew, we could actually call him Dasher, and he came out to Natural Born Killers, and that felt more chaotic than this. Like, this felt like a 6-man match that broke down, where the multi-man match from Sokol's was like a crazy, wild ECW-esque brawl from the start. Just for something a little bit different, I would have put that in there. But this was the best match that you could have probably put on there involving these characters and this storyline and everything else. I loved it. And I'm glad I got a chance to call it with Danny Havoc, my friend Grant. I miss you, buddy. I hope you're doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully down the road we can get a second volume of this. And, you know, we can have that match you just mentioned and the blow-off match. You know, what was it, like a tables, ladders, and chairs match? Or,
yep.
You know, just a chance for everybody to see that storyline. I think that'd be fun. That's kind of, again, I did not see the first two LVAC shows live, but the theme that ran throughout them was the feud between Mr. X and Ultramantis Black, and something very easy to follow.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we have a PSA from Murlock teaching you how to properly wash your hands. And then the next match was the aforementioned Kevin Blackwood versus Cheeseburger, which I had commented as is probably the best technical match, just in my naive eyes, out of what LVAC has put out. Again, from what I've seen, I really enjoyed this match. Both guys went hard back and forth. And it kind of just stood out, you know, and not to put down any other matches that are on there, but it was probably the most crisp. I don't know, for lack of a better word.
Yes. So, you know, I hate to bring it up again, but we talked about it at the beginning of the show. You know, you have a match between two baby faces. Things maybe break down a little bit, whatever. And then this is what happens. I'm just looking at this card. Of course, this was the show with, you know, the aforementioned Dan Champion versus Puff, the Dasher versus Mantis match. The big 8 or the big 10 person to top off the show, and Rex Lawless and Molly McCoy taking on Kevin Koo and Max the Impaler. You know what? I'll mention it. Super Dudes versus Kodama and Murlock as things kind of got flipped and flopped around for that show. But this was a great match. If you liked the Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak match from SmackDown this past week, you'll love this match.
Yeah, 100%. All right, and next up we have, it ran for about 45 minutes, but it was Dan Champion's workout advice. We'll say that we'll leave that there.
I followed and will follow none of it.
All right, and next up we had The Boar and Rex Lawless, accompanied by the benevolent Chris Reject, Commissioner Chris Reject, versus some spooky folks. We had Willow Nightingale and Solo Darling. No, actually, they were replaced by Kane and Undertaker. So this happened at the last Halloween show. Look for me right near Boar's entrance, you know. But I mean, things were going well for the Boar and Rex until Willow and Solo sat up and got all spooky, and then things maybe didn't go so well for Boar and Rex.
Another good match. You know, could have shaved like 2 minutes off this one. But other than that, I really liked it. And again, obviously we can't, and there was too many people there. I would have tried to involve a spot with the dog and Chris Reject, where the dog chases Chris Reject around, but that dog is very docile and seems to be, you know, nervous around people and does not seem to be like a trained attack dog unless someone like smeared like some sardine oil on Chris Reject's boots or whatever. No, it was a really good match. I liked that Willow and Solo kind of went all in on their Kane and Undertaker stuff. And doing as much of their moves as possible. Hopefully next year we get to see Boar live out his dream to cosplay as either Diesel or Don Morocco or Butch Reed or Randy Orton or all the other people that he likes.
Yeah. You know what? I will say, as much as I applauded your commentary, I will throw this out there that I don't know if it was during this Boar match or the first one in like the six-way match, when you said that he should be coming out to the Soulzy Diesel theme.
It was the first match.
Okay, you have never been more right in your life. That's your first, like, really A-plus comment.
It's one of those things where, like, I'm watching it, and I see his entrance, and I'm thinking in my head as I'm watching it, I go, oh, man, how awesome would it be if Bork came out to the Bluesy Diesel theme? And then he gets in the ring, and then I say it on commentary, and I'm like, oh, okay, I was right.
Yeah, somebody needs to create, like, a GIF of, like, whatever, when it shows the 18-wheeler coming up to the glass, and then, you know, like, the old entrance. Anyways, yes. I'm just fantasy booking here. All right, we have a PSA from Brave Billy Avery about the importance of wearing a mask. And then we have our main event from, once again, the Mall Madness show. We have Dan Champion versus freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy. This is, again, I mentioned before, I've seen this match many times because one of these competitors, I'm not going to say who, keeps uploading it to free internet. But this is the first time that I've seen a highly produced version of it and with commentary and everything like that. And it still holds up. One of my favorite LVAC matches. I'm not going to say who wins, but one of them's on TNT every week. The other one is in my DMs, but great match from both of them, I'll say. Dan worked hard in this match. Dan was awesome. Yep. Really good time.
Good match. Great match. I'm sure you've seen it. If you haven't, definitely check it out. If you like Orange Cassidy, it's awesome. Dan's really good too. Dan's a great foil for a character like this, a character like Puff. I know in some of the earlier shows in 2020, where we even talked about them here, I think on National Pro Wrestling Day, for those Chikara Wrestling is Fun events, Dan was, how we mentioned before, in the tag team match where Chris Statlander was woefully miscast as the heel, in many matches this year at Chikara and Wrestling is Fun, Dan was woefully miscast as a babyface.
Yeah.
even though the crowd was super into it and they cheered, I don't like seeing fans cheering Dan. They should be booing him, and only we secretly should be cheering him because we know Dan is really good.
Yes, if you see Dan Champion in the ring or working out or at a store, anywhere, just boo him.
Yeah.
Boo him nonstop. Tell him we sent you.
Pretty much.
And obviously I alluded to this earlier in the discussion, but we had Bryce Remsburg refereeing this, and he was definitely not calling it down the middle. There was no Bill Alfonso here. He had an agenda. Maybe he knew about his future, you know, career path and wanted to stay good on that side of the company, but he was not calling it down the middle. There was a little shenanigans in that match. Mm-hmm. Yeah. and then obviously we have a musical performance from Outer Haven, I believe it said, and then a final PSA that I was told not to spoil because it was kind of funny and important. So definitely check that stuff out. But overall, I know I come off as a shill of the LVAC, and so do you sometimes, maybe because we're kind of loosely affiliated with them, more so than I. But I thoroughly enjoyed all of this. I started watching it like maybe 5 o'clock yesterday, and I was, you know, taking pauses here and there because I was taking photos and tweeting it out and, you know, tagging people in it. But like next thing I knew, it was like 9 o'clock. So like there's a lot of wrestling and a lot of content on this. And like I said, I mean, for like a dollar, you know, hopefully a little bit more, but for as little as a dollar, you can watch all of this and just own it, you know, have access to the stream forevers. Or until, like, the streaming service it uses somehow goes away in the apocalypse. But that's about it, you know?
Yeah, and listen, I'm not going to say that you should do this, but if you buy the show, it's not like it's, like, one giant file on YouTube. They're all up there as individual matches, and, like, you know, it's not difficult to save stuff that's up on YouTube, especially files that are, like, 10 to 25 minutes a pop. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. I mean, would do. I paid for it. You know, you never know what's going to happen with YouTube links. Who knows? Tomorrow, YouTube could just go away. And the time of me being on Howard Stern could be taken off the internet. So, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's one way. That's one way of doing it. There's the right way of doing it. If it goes away, you pay for it again, Joe. That's how it happens.
Listen, I will say this. I own DVDs of every show that's on DVD. Multiple copies, because I've bought multiple copies to give away as prizes on the show.
Uh-huh.
I own them all on MP4 because I bought the MP4 downloads during sales from Smart Mark Video. And I purchased this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I paid, I'm not going to say like I paid $1, but I didn't pay $100. So it's somewhere in between there.
All right.
And I get paid by this company to work for them. And I'm giving my money back to them.
All right. Then you're allowed. But everybody else out there, no ripping and definitely no distributing. Sons of bitches.
Yeah.
No sharing. Unless somebody comes over, then you can watch it there, but then they have to buy their own copy.
Nobody's supposed to be coming over.
Well, yeah. Reopen America. That's what Jonas tells me over on Pod Van Dam. He's a big Reopen America guy, and that's where I'm getting this from.
He has a banner on his porch that says he personally beat the COVID-19. And that might be a thrift store jobber's neighbor. I'm not sure.
All right.
Anyway, yeah, and it's freewheeling on there. But I don't even know what to call in about this week. I'll probably call in between like finishing this and posting this. I'll call in.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll call in this week. I haven't decided. I'll save my rant about my title for the call in.
Yeah. I got nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I know. I'm definitely going rogue on that one. Anyways, I guess we're at the part where I would just let people know that while you cannot watch the LVAC show on independentwrestling.tv, maybe you can watch some of the stuff that Joe and I are going to suggest soon. Use our promo code @odds to get 5 free days. And spoiler, I will tell you that my next suggestion is on Independent Wrestling TV.
Okay, good.
So I've already picked that. I picked that a while ago. But what about you, Joe? Now, don't spoil it, but do you have your next pick picked out?
I got like my next 3.
Oh, Jesus. See, you try too hard.
No, it's just like, so I had one for sure, right?
Okay.
And it's one that I stooged off to people. A couple people. And then I thought of like 2 more that I really want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, ooh. Definitely put those on the list. So I have a running list. I just have to make sure that I delete out of the email when I forward it to you.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Obviously, we've thrown a bunch of plugs around. Pod Van Dam, we mentioned just now. Final Wrestling Place, we mentioned earlier in the show. And the other members of the soon-to-be-named network, Wednesday Night War. Give them a listen. Longbox Heroes and Longbox Heroes After Dark. I believe... now, I'm not going to say this. I thought there was a TeePublic sale for our shirts, but I think that went away, so I will shut up now.
Yes.
All right. Buy them at full price, goddammit. I don't know. There's an Uncle Taker shirt. Like I said, Marcus needs baby clothes. I've heard babies are expensive. I have nothing to base this on, but I heard they are pricey. So help out the team. But other than that, Joe, unless you have something else, I'm all good.
Did you mention stuff like Wrestling Cheers?
Oh, no, I did not. I just actually listened to their most recent, not their most recent episode. I listened to the Eric Stevens episode 2 days ago. I have not listened to their latest one, Wrestling Cheers. Obviously, always been a longtime friend of ours, but now we're just making sure that we shout them out more often.
Yeah, they're doing their own thing. Mondays, of course, John Thorne, AIW, the card is going to change. He had Nick Stapp, the former CPA, on there. Mm-hmm. And if there's my new favorite thing is CPA's impression of Balls Mahoney. You have to listen to it. At one time, regular tag team partner of CPA, Balls Mahoney. The New York Indies get weird sometimes, man.
Yeah.
And as this is coming out Friday morning, Virtual Pros will be having their episode of the Shame Cup 2020.
Oh, I saw that bracket. I cannot decide who I want to win because there's so many horrible people or types of people on that bracket.
Okay. So I will say you have to listen to the episode to get the explanation of the brackets. Like they did a bunch of tweets,
mm-hmm.
kind of giving you some insider stuff. It's one thing to read a description of front row standers or meet and creeps or thirst responders. It's another thing to hear Al and Mike wax poetically about how much they hate these type of people.
Dude, thirst responders might be my favorite phrase ever.
I will say this. The first round matchup having Corona Truthers and meet and creeps, whoever wins that match is going to be very tough to beat on the way to the finals. And I'm just going to say, if you're not following Virtual Pros, and that's VRTLPROS on Twitter, start following them now. Download the episode on Friday. Listen to them before us. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh shit, I didn't listen to Virtual Pros yet, then you fucked up. It's going to be great. You know, you got to hit that heart button, like button, or whatever it is, because you know that Al likes it. And yeah, you know, it's the Shame Cup, everyone.
Mm-hmm. And I like how you put at the end of our episode to make sure you're listening to them first. It was good timing there.
Yeah.
All right.
This is where we do the plugs.
Yeah. No, I know. But you know what I'm saying.
I do. Yes.
Now that you've just listened to this 2-hour podcast, stop and make sure you didn't and go listen to Virtual Pros.
I don't know. If I feel like it, I might record a little something just to throw at the beginning of this podcast, but probably not.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
Nope.
Yeah. All right. That's all I got, Joe.
All right, good. Everyone, thank you very much for listening to episode 90 of At Odds with Wrestling. I made it through an entire episode without calling Adam Todd. I never call Todd Adam, but I sometimes call Adam Todd, and I hate when I do it. I get very upset with myself.
Mm-hmm.
But again, thanks for listening. Be safe and enjoy some wrestling.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of Podcast Network.